This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. Have you noticed how many people hire house cleaners these days? According to MediaMark research, the number of households employing outside cleaning help has more than doubled in the last 5 years. The majority of these households use freelance housekeepers, but each year more people are turning to cleaning services such as Merry Maids, Molly Maids, Maid Brigade, and the Maids International. This boom in the international house cleaning industry caught the attention of social historian and journalist Barbara Ehrenreich. As part of her research for a book about low-wage workers, she got a job last year on a cleaning crew for the Maids International in Portland, Maine. Ehrenreich's books include Fear of Falling, The Inner Life of the Middle Class, and Complaints and Disorders, The Sexual Politics of Sickness. Her articles and essays have appeared in such publications as Time, Mother Jones, and the New York Times Magazine. She's also a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine. Her article about her experience as a maid and her thoughts about the social ramifications of the burgeoning service industry is the cover story in this month's issue of Harper's. In it, she describes her typical workday. Starting at 7, she was assigned to a 4-person crew. They cleaned 5 houses a day, with barely time for a convenience store pit stop lunch. I asked her whether she thought, going into this, that she knew how to clean.
See, I thought, well, this will be easy, you know. I'm, you know, actually in real life a writer and a journalist, but, you know, I've cleaned my own house, always have. This is going to be easy. I know how to do it, right? Well, surprise. You know, you had to watch these training tapes to find out the system. And the system was incredibly precise, you know, that you, I'll never forget it. In fact, I think I'll have a hard time shaking it in my own house. You enter a room, you move from left to right. Well, first you divide the room mentally into these sections. And within each section, you also go from left to right and top to bottom. And you never vary from that. Also, the way you move between rooms is described quite precisely, and so there you don't have to do a lot of thinking beyond which cleaning fluid you might be using or you know, something like that.
And is the point of all that efficiency to keep you from
time? That's what I was told by the boss. He said that, you know, this was all done on the basis of time motion studies. I actually, once I got over my resentment of this, was glad to have it because, you know, you when you're under a lot of time pressure, you might make a mistake. You might leave a spot out or you might redo something, which would be even more tragic, I think.
So how sanitary is it? How clean is a house after one of these, your teams was done with it?
Well, when we were done, it looked beautiful. I mean, every surface was shining. You know, we looked very nice. Now, I have my criticisms, though, of how actually sanitary any of these methods are. Very little water is used in the entire process, and I think this applies to the other large cleaning services, too. Most everything is cleaned with a damp rag. Now, That's really not going to do it. You know, when I got out of this situation and was full of curiosity about what I just experienced, I called some house cleaning experts, and they were fairly appalled. You know, because the goal with these cleaning services is really to make things look good. It's not to kill germs, you know, bacteria, viruses, anything like that. It's just to make things look good. So, for example, if you really want to get your kitchen counter clean, do you want to hear this, Barbara?
I think I've been through this before. You spray with a disinfectant, and you wait 3 or 4 minutes, and then you wipe it with a clean cloth.
But you don't, or you use a lot of hot soapy water or something. But you don't just wipe with a damp rag.
Well, you make the case in the article in Harper's that that this isn't a good thing. It's not a good trend. And regardless of whether you have a cleaning service or you hire a freelancer to clean your home, it's maybe not such a great thing. Why is that? I'm thinking as women return to the workplace, their time is worth more. Why do housework if it doesn't make financial sense, especially in a boom time when we're not thinking of saving the way our post-war parents thought about it? Why not spend the money paying someone to do something you don't want to do yourself?
Well, you know, there's a sort of a slippery slope on both sides of this argument. I mean, you can, you know, on the one hand, you know, you could say to me, well, and of course we're used to, you know, we're used to all kinds of low-paid people, you know, involved in food processing, stitching our clothes somewhere in the world. Why not this? But, you know, it's a slippery slope on the other side, too. As you start moving toward being a servant economy, which certainly the upper middle class and the upper class in this country have done, there are costs, I think, and not only to the relatively low-wage people who do the work. I think there are effects on the family that is waited on. The thing that would go through my mind so often when I was cleaning is, what about the children in this setting? You know, you'd walk into some teenager's room and maybe have to take 15 minutes to pick up the clothes and other debris on the floor before you could vacuum. And, of course, fold each one of those items very nicely. And you think, what's going on with this? Well, first, you're producing a kid who is not going to be able to take care of themselves, clearly, but is also has a pretty funny attitude toward the world, you know, who assumes that things that they mess up or dirty up will be taken care of by someone else. And I would not have been happy if my children had been raised or turned out to have that kind of contempt for other people's work. So that's one of the things.
So you see, this is a moral issue. There's a moral dimension in not cleaning your own mess.
But right, clean your own mess. That's my something I try to teach my kids. But another part of my reaction to this comes from having been involved in the feminist movement for 25 years or so, and our radical vision in the 1970s. Was not that some women were going to go out to work and have brilliant careers while some other women came in and did that tedious work for them, but that men and women were going to share the work of the home. You know, the man you're living with, boyfriend or husband, were going to share the work of the home, and that no woman was going to get ahead in her career by depending on the relatively ignominious work of some other woman in the home.
I think it's interesting, though, that you point out that feminists such as Betty Friedan hailed hiring housekeepers as a big step in women's liberation, that it was demystifying the myth that housework is the woman's lot. So did she get it wrong?
Well, no, wait. How is she demystifying the idea that it's a woman's lot? Those house cleaners are not men, by and large. I mean, they're overwhelmingly female. What that says to me, though, about Betty Friedan's brand of feminism is something, well, it's been said many times before, is that she was really directing herself to the upper middle class, college-educated woman, and that her notion of the constituency for feminism did not include the potential cleaning person in that, mm-hmm. the cleaning woman. You know, it was all, hey, we can get ahead if we get these cleaning women and don't even bother having the arguments with our husbands. And it doesn't say, well, what about her?
Where did the momentum go in that bonding of politics and housework? And you point out that in the 60s and the 70s, there was the movement wages for housework. And being a feminist practically meant that you fought with a male partner or your housemates about sharing the housework. And that's faded out.
I don't know. This is a very vexing question. There's some interesting data from a big University of Maryland study, which was reported, I think, last fall. And they really examined the division of housework between men and women in the home. And they found, yes, indeed, men have taken up more work than they used to do. You know, between 1965 and the mid-90s, there is some more equality between the sexes in the home. But that trend toward men doing more just seems to stop in the mid-80s. You know, as if, men suddenly said, that's it, that's all I'm doing. or the woman decided, I'm not going to have this fight anymore. You know, and there was, by the mid-80s, much less of a on-the-ground, grassroots feminist movement that was going to provide you psychological support in that fight at home.
I just want to get back to this idea that it's impossible to remain pure in all areas of your life. I mean, I don't make my own soap or my own cheese. I don't, not only do I not sew my own clothes, I sometimes buy clothes at the Gap, say, or I buy my clothes there. Why draw the line at housework?
I'm not, you know, the point of this article of mine in Harper's was not to say, hey, fire your maid and do it yourself. It was to say something about the conditions of this kind of work, especially in the cleaning services that are taking over. Just as we have sought to understand who's making our jeans, and I confess to buying from the Gap too, and how can we pressure that company to do better, to stop with the, you know, getting the sweatshop clothes. I think we need to know more about the people who do all kinds of work around us, even when the information is painful. And, you know, some people I think probably do treat their independent freelance cleaning person very well. At least many of the people I talk to say, claim they just pay extravagantly and are, you know, friends with this person. But I think the people who, you know, who use these cleaning services should know what kind of conditions, should know that in effect, let me put it very baldly, that in some sense their home doubles as a sweatshop during the day.
My guest is Barbara Ehrenreich. She's the author of a number of books of social history and intellectual analysis. She is also a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine, and we're talking about her article, her cover story in this month's issue of Harper's. It's called Made to Order, The Politics of Other Women's Work. Barbara, we're going to take a break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is social historian Barbara Ehrenreich. She has an article in this month's Harper Magazine about the politics of housework. It's called Made to Order. Okay, in the spirit of full disclosure, after my second child was born, I hired a young couple to clean my house every 2 weeks. And I find that I make all of these really arbitrary distinctions about what I think it's okay for them to do for me. For instance, I and the kids straighten up the house like crazy before they come. Some part of my brain just thinks it's not okay for people to pick up after me, but it is all right for them to do heavy cleaning, as if that's a professional skill they have. Now, do you find these kinds of conflicted feelings come up when you talk to people about their hiring cleaning help?
Yes. What I didn't make a point of systematically interviewing employers of cleaning people, but when I have informally talked to friends who do, I think there's a lot of anxiety and guilt around this issue, and unfortunately more in the women than the men when they talk about it. I mean, if there's any anxiety and guilt, it should be both men and women who share it. And yeah, so I think that part of that lingers from the huge debates we had about housework in the 70s, and the idea then that housework was this form of labor that united all women, right, except for the very, very richest, because we all did it. You know, there is some tension.
I do keep reading about women, I guess, and some men screaming at the help during dinner parties in front of guests. That seems to be a favorite lead in the New York Times.
Yes, I read the same story.
Yeah, that the nouveau riche doesn't know how to treat the help.
Yeah, no, that's really appalling. Now, I never ran into anything like that in my short life as a maid, although There were cases of rudeness, what I could only call great rudeness and indifference. For example, we, for some reason that beats me, management did not allow us to ever drink anything while we were working. Now, this was an extreme hardship. Part of the time I was working, it was still very hot, end of August. And I said, what, can't I bring my bottled water, you know? Hey, we yuppies always have our bottled water. You can't take that from me in 90-degree heat.
Why? Is this because on the surveillance camera, the hidden surveillance camera, it might look like you're swilling gin?
I really can't imagine the rationale. It's some demented idea of professionalism, you know, that if you're a profession, you have no physical needs of your own. So, you know, I kept hoping someone would offer me a glass of water, and my coworkers too, if I was feeling generous about it, on these very hot days, because, you know, I would be just pouring sweat. This is much worse than gym sweat. This was, you know, I could wring out my ponytail. I could wring out my braid. I was sweating that much. Only one time did anybody offer me a glass of water. And I was just like absurdly grateful to this woman. You know, but they'd walk by with their iced tea or whatever. And, you know, they'd never think about this person or people in front of them who were just drenched in sweat, on their hands and knees on the floor, to say, like, some water, and forget about, you know, forget about coffee or anything in this story.
I guess that's part of the allure of these cleaning services, that you don't actually deal with the people who are cleaning your home. I mean, you see them in your home, but your relationship is with the manager of the service, right? If you
yeah,
have any complaints, you go to them.
Yeah, and the manager is likely to be a middle-class white person, so you don't feel, you know, and you don't feel that you're have to deal across any gap of class and race. I mean, it sort of bothers me how uncurious of the employers, the people who use these services are. For example, the one I worked with charged its customers, the homeowners, $25 a person per person hour. That means the company was paid $25 for every hour I worked for $6 an hour and change. Now, you'd think, you know, somebody would ask, hey, by the way, for the money I'm paying you, the boss, what are you paying the women who work for you? Or how come they don't get a break in maybe as long as 3 hours? How come I've never seen any of them even run out to the car to get a drink of water? No questions.
Cleaning really is just one example of outsourcing in the home. There are all sorts of services people are using right now, personal online assistants, personal dressers, dinner delivery, landscapers. These are all kind of the high-end personal assistants, service contractors. But I'm curious what you think the side effects are from this trend of people not really taking care of the daily tasks of life. And not really learning how to take pleasure from the daily tasks of life, like walking your own dog or, you know, cooking your meals or gardening.
It's part of what looks to me like a kind of frenzy. The upper middle class or maybe the upper 15-20% of the population is involved in. They work very hard. They work too hard. It's more than that, though. It's not just that they have a lot of work to do, but it's important if you're in that class to look busy. You know, this is kind of sick, that busyness becomes a mark of social status. You know, historically, if you go back, you know, through the centuries, leisure was the status insignia of the very powerful and rich. We've strangely inverted that. And, I mean, one of the things I think that's sort of nice about doing housework, and I'm not going to romanticize it. Some critic called me the Martha Stewart of the left, so I'm pretty careful about this.
You know?
Yeah. this critic never saw my house, obviously, but it's not that it's a great psychological thing to clean a bathroom floor, but I think that what we lose is, for example, is ways of interacting with family members that are sort of natural, that are around doing something else. You know, I know as a mother, you're not going to have a very interesting conversation with a child by putting her down and, you know, sitting her down in the kitchen with some cookies after school and saying, well, how was school today? You know, nothing comes of that. But what I found worked for me much better as a mother, and I had to do it anyway, was, hey, look, you want to put these clothes away? You know, why don't we do this together? And then you're not like focusing on that child as if he or she were some kind of, you know, it was what you were working on. She's not an object of your work. The two of you are working on something else, and that's when there's a kind of a calm and ordinary conversation with maybe some very interesting revelations about what's going on with the child.
Well, that's exactly right. There's such an interesting shift in parenting going on. It used to be that your kids were around while you did your work at home, and they joined in and they learned things. And if parents aren't doing that anymore with their kids, the time ends up becoming all about exactly the child, or about academics at best, about reading, or at worst TV. The time is just something that you fill, that you don't share together in some meaningful way.
Right, and I think this helps transmit that kind of frenzy, that kind of high-pressure approach to life down to the kids, because they don't see anybody of their social class, actually doing some physical labor or anything like that. They feel that there's all this pressure on them to achieve, to do terrifically in the SATs or soccer or whatever else.
Right, not to enjoy things just for their own sake.
Yeah. Right. Or even when it's not enjoying it, I mean, an enjoyable sort of thing, even when it's a matter of this is something that has to get done, it's sort of, it can be slow, it can be tedious, but we're doing it together. And that makes all the difference in the world.
Well, Barbara Ehrenreich, I want to thank you very much for talking today. That was fun.
I enjoyed it.
Barbara Ehrenreich is an author, essayist, and a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine. Her article about the politics of house cleaning appears in the current issue of the magazine. This is Fresh Air.